From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. This week we're going to share some of our favorite new music that's flying under the radar. But then the night came, you were gone. Plus, we remember audio engineer Jeff Emmerich, who worked with the Beatles on Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's. We're going to revisit our conversation with him. That she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely
people. Where do they all come from? That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, Jim, we're going to pay tribute to the late Jeff Emmerich, a name that may not be a household name, but certainly a legendary audio engineer, especially for his work with the Beatles, classics like Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and Abbey Road, among other classic recordings.
But now it's time for another round of buried treasures. Greg, this is one of our favorite shows, right?
Yes, indeed, indeed.
What's a buried treasure? This is a recording that we define as something that's probably under the mainstream radar. You probably haven't heard of it. We collect these. We try to do this show every once in a while and turn you on to great music that deserves a wider audience. Greg, you get to go first.
Jim, I'm going to start off with an exploration of garage rock, one of our favorite genres.
Oh, yeah.
Ever since the 60s, right? Every band that wanted to be, you know, we just talked about the Beatles. Well, there was a lot of bands cropping up all over America that wanted to be the Beatles playing music in garages. And that tradition has carried on a long and glorious history in Chicago. The last decade, we've had a ton of these really great garage rock combos. In other words, these are veterans from that scene that are forming this band, Ethers. Two things that make Ethers stand out from the pack. One is the songwriting. Bo Hansson, in particular, he is writing deeper, more introspectively, lyrically, than you would expect from the typical garage rock band. The suicide of an older brother has really informed a number of the lyrics on this album, and it's impossible to miss that vibe, that melancholy, tragic vibe that courses through a number of these songs. Mm. But it's not a downer at all. This is a great band, and I think the other distinctive feature of this band is the keyboardist, Mary McCain. She plays one of those farfises.
And you're a sucker for that. I can't get you to play with my band ever. I don't know why.
And what I like about it is Ethers does not use the farfisa as just sort of a little accent. It's an overdriven lead instrument in this band. And some of the heavier rockers, it really blasts into the forefront. The song I'm going to play, though, is more on the contemplative side. It's just got a haunting melody to it. You hear the band's gift for hooks, as well as that sort of underlying tone of melancholy. It's something from the band Ethers on Sound Opinions.
Takes me over.
That is Ethers with a song called Something, one of my buried treasures.
I'm loving it, Craig. This is what buried treasures are supposed to do. You just turned me on to them. I would say that they are more of the late era garage,
yeah,
where it's not just tearing it up, fake R&B, amphetamized, mm-hmm, right? I mean, there's a lot of psychedelia in
yeah,
there.
For
it
sure.
Reminds me of the psychedelic seeds. I'm going to go all the way to New Zealand for my first buried treasure, a band called The Beths. My favorite band from New Zealand since Flight of the Conchords.
Mm.
This is a wonderful, really energetic pop punk band with a sort of indie, chimey, psychedelic, almost at times vibe. Think of the great Courtney Barnett fronting The Chills or The Clean, other great Kiwi bands, right? And I don't make that Courtney Barnett comparison lightly. The leader of this group, Elizabeth Stokes, is a really smart, almost novelistic songwriter. Sometimes I think I'm doing fine. I think I'm pretty smart. Then the walls become thin. Somebody gets in. I'm defenseless. I love that line from a song called Future Me Hates Me. And I love that whole concept of you as someone, a young person, trying to find your way in the world, and you're looking ahead and thinking, someday, maybe I'll get it together, and that person's going to hate the person I am now. Wow, that is a lot to pack into this explosive, guitar-driven, frenetically drummed pop-punk song. I just love it. The Beths from New Zealand, Future Me Hates Me. That is The Beths with the title track from their new album, just came out in August, Future Me Hates Me, Car Park Records.
That is a great title, to say, Future
yeah, isn't
Me
that
Hates
great?
Me. Yeah.
That's the story of my life.
And, the other thing about this record, Jim, we talked about the sophistication or relative sophistication of what the Ethers were doing. The same thing with The Beths, those counterpoint harmonies really got me.
Yeah.
Kind of a cut above on this record. The next band I want to go to is Our Girl from the UK, Brighton, to be specific, a co-ed trio led by a woman named Soph Nathan. She's also a member of a band called Big Moon. But Our Girl, her other band, sounds nothing like them. Big Moon is kind of more downbeat and more atmospheric.
Mm.
Our Girl is a trio in which Nathan's guitar is right up front. I love her sort of understated, very conversational vocal style, but she's got a real feel for hooks as a guitar player. Not only hooks, but also the ability to crank it up.
Mm-hmm.
You get from these kind of eerie mood pieces that just sort of explode, when you least expect it. So that dynamic plays itself out. This is a really, really good debut album. It's called Stranger Today, and here's a track from it. It's called In My Head from Our Girl on Sound Opinions.
I wish I told you I'm still me, and I saw I love your family. I wish I told you I'm still me, and I saw.
In My Head from Our Girl on Sound Opinions.
Yeah, that's a good one, Greg. It reminds me very much of Mary Timoney's band, Helium.
Oh, yeah.
Both in terms of the understated vocals and those killer guitars. There has been no shortage at all in the last couple of years of great up-and-coming Chicago rappers putting their music out on SoundCloud, working to build the next Chicago scene, a community to follow Chance the Rapper. And Matt Muse is part of that. You know, how do buried treasures come to you? I've told stories before. You know, sometimes you get this email, please listen to me, right? Mm. And something strikes. I know Matt's mother, who is a colleague in academia, and she's fantastic. And she said, listen to my son's record, right? That combined with almost the same day reading a piece that Lior Galil wrote in the Chicago Reader. Said, okay, I'm going to listen to Matt Muse. And Matt's got his first real album out now after several mixtapes called Nappy Talk. You know, and it's catching fire. He got to perform at Taste of Chicago this summer. People are buzzing about this record. You know, he's a guy who believes in community. He's a teaching artist with Young Chicago Authors, a really great group in the community. He's been working and got his break with Donda's House, named for Kanye West's mother, now Art of Culture, run by Rhymefest, Jay Smith. So he gives back, and his way of looking at the South Side, this wonderful community in Chicago that is also plagued with violence, all right, is through his hair. Nappy Talk, right? He's got an incredible do, which is kind of like the hip-hop take on a flock of seagulls. And he said that, you know, it's when he began to look for a straight job, you know, everybody expected him to, you know, kind of corporate up his hair. And then he decided to hell with that. I am going to let it be all that it can be. I grew my hair. I don't care. Let them stay. It got longer. Boys got stronger. If I spell it right, I don't know if I'm explaining it right. You know, I'm going to play a track called Getting to It. It's got that, you know, hip-hop braggadocio thing, but the humor and then also the sense of community. I got seven words for a naysayer, Gambino for president, and Muse for mayor. Bring the city to completion. Touch the sky, it had me reaching. Now I'm gripping on this cloud. Hope it won't let me down. You know, I think he's got a really firm sense of hip-hop history. He is proud of his roots. He said he wanted this record musically to sound like the tunes blaring from an old Cadillac driving around on the South Side, while lyrically he wanted to talk about the present. Getting to It by Matt Muse from Nappy Talk on Sound Opinions.
I say thank you, Grandma, for shacking me. Thank you, Mama, for smacking me. Thank you, Papa, for strapping me with raps to catch them lacking. Thank the city for shacking me. Thank them dudes for jacking me. I ain't worried who adding me. My squad is in back of me, and we getting to it. Getting to it. Okay, now let's get into it. Getting to it. Watch me while I get into it. I got seven words for a naysayer. Kanye for president and Chance for mayor. Bring the city to completion. Touch the sky, you had me reaching. Now I'm gripping on this cloud, hoping it won't let me down. On a wing and a prayer that we fly but a spell. Samson, I grew my hair. I don't care, you let them stay. It got longer, boss got stronger. If I spell it right, I conjure up to help me conquer. I can't wait on me no longer. This ain't college. This real life, no scholarship, no free ride. This CTA, not GTA, that let me know your ETA. I'm outside, just arrived, try to stem me wrong and I show you right. Hey, your auntie, like, show your ride, cause it go right when you flowing right. The pen be working when your mama sick of working it. You gotta hurt them when your pocket steady hurting it. I know for certain this will have my granny smirking. So I'm going Gordon Hayward when they open that curtain. You know I'm getting to it. Okay, now let's get into it. Getting to it. Watch me while I get into it. North side.
Greg, in introducing Matt Muse, I mentioned I read Lior Galil write about him, and he's turning me on to a lot of great music. He is the music columnist at the Chicago Reader. We want to share the buried treasure wealth. Lior, welcome to Sound Opinions. You got some treasures for us.
I do indeed. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. What is the first treasure you're going to lay on us?
The first one is a group from St. Louis called Foxing. They're an emo band. About 5 years ago, you could see them play the first of four bands at Township, which is exactly a
emo,
for those of you non-Chicago, it's about the size of a thumbtack. And They have shown tremendous growth over the course of several albums. This is their third album, Near My God, came out a couple months ago, and it is just enormous. It feels like the world opens whenever I hear it, and particularly the title track. This is a song that the co-producer, Chris Walla, formerly of Death Cab for Cutie, apparently went to the mat for, is what he told Stereo Gum. The band was going to cut it. Not even included on the record, which is funny because it's this title of the record. I saw them play in Lincoln Hall a couple weeks ago, which is a slightly larger space than Township. They introduced a song as this is for anyone who has worked on something creatively and felt like giving up. It's so clear that they put themselves out there and that they took real risks. It sounds like a pop song. It sounds like a pop song from the 80s. It sounds like a pop song that is very much of this moment as well. There's very little hint of contemporary emo, of 2000s emo in it.
This is the emo revival. I think they're young enough to qualify. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What I like to call the fourth wave emo. I love it because they took such great risks in pulling off this song, and I think it works tremendously. This is Foxing with Near My God on Sound Opinions.
Foxing with Nearer My God on Sound Opinions. Lior, you know I love you, man. That's why you're on the show. I hate this song. I hate this band. I don't think it's a good idea to combine emo with Muse.
Yeah, that's the first Muse thing that came to my head, actually, was Muse and U2 or something like that. There have been other critics that I deeply respect, like yourself, who have been raving about this record. And I feel like I'm the dumbest kid on the block because I don't get it. I for probably similar reasons to what you just said.
Not at all.
It sounds like a really bloated arena rock record. Like you mentioned the 80s.
Yeah.
This is like something I'd hear in an arena in the 80s. That's what I'm thinking.
And run for the exit.
So what am I missing here?
To me, because I've been listening to this band since the beginning, the progression is part of what I find so appealing. Mm. They were really shabby at first, but clearly had great ambition. They sounded like they wanted to write for an orchestra, and there's something about their ability to combine like 90s emo catharsis with huge production in the case of the new album that is so compelling to me, is unusual, and unusual for the scene that they came out of. To me, it's this record is symbolic of a band that's at the edge of something that could just break up tomorrow and are deciding to just throw every idea.
Or maybe they could become 21 Pilots. So either way. All right. If you've got a pick of an album that we really need to hear, call and leave a message on our hotline, 888-859-1800, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. After a break, Greg and I will dig up some more buried treasures, plus Lior has one more pick, too. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and we're going through some of our recent favorite records that haven't gotten as much attention as they should. We're calling them buried treasures. Today we're joined by Lior Galil of the Chicago Reader, an alt-weekly paper with roots that go back 50 years, right, Lior?
Yeah, just celebrated 47.
Yeah.
Hey.
What's your final buried treasure?
My final one is Gia Margaret put on an album called There's Always Glimmer earlier this summer on local label Arundel. She is a Chicagoan. The guy who runs the label, his name is Owen Ashworth. He sent this over to me earlier this summer, and the second song, Birthday, just completely hooked me. I got this at the beginning of summer where I am just a little turned off of music because of all the festivals that are going on. And I mean, music festival season is just exhausting. Everything has to be big. And here was this record that felt so intimate and reminded me of what I like about music and felt so comforting at a time when music is just punishing to me, unfortunately.
That is well said. So this is Gia Margaret from Chicago with a track called Birthday on Sound Opinions. That is Birthday on Sound Opinions from an artist named Gia Margaret, as picked by Lior Galil, our guest from the Chicago Reader. Lior, that's beautiful stuff. Chamber pop kind of record, very understated, beautiful voice. I could see where that could be a breath of fresh air in a cluttered summer of music.
You know, you sent me from that song digging into the rest of her stuff, you know, which is exactly what we hope to do with this show. And you actually chose kind of the most Spartan of her songs. It's really stark and, you know, kind of Nick Drake, you know. But elsewhere, we get that full-on chamber pop cardinal, you know, kind of thing. You know, it's wonderful.
So what's her background as a singer? Because she's just got a beautiful voice.
She's just been working in her bedroom for...
Really?
You know, since like 2010 at least, her earliest SoundCloud songs at the moment are from 6 years ago. And I mean, talk about Spartan. Some of those tracks are just like synths or really tinny sounding acoustic recording.
Wow.
Here she actually raised money for this on Kickstarter to record this album. And she was able to bring in 10 other musicians and really fill it out and really feel the space that was in front of her. It is such a progression from, you know, these ideas that she'd had on SoundCloud and still has out there. And it's great that she's kept documentation of this.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Lior Galil writes for the Chicago Reader. You can read it online if you're not lucky enough to be in Chicago. Thanks, Lior.
Thank you for having me.
Greg, you got another treasure for us?
I do, Jim. This is a little bit out of left field. It's not a traditional rock record in any sense or a hip-hop record. It's more of a Latin jazz record. But I cannot get enough of it. I think people will appreciate it. It's put out by the mighty Daptone label, the home of the late Sharon Jones and the late Charles Bradley, and I think this is the best record they put out since that heyday. It's by Orchestra Akokan, which is basically an all-star band, a 16-piece big band of seasoned Cuban musicians, multi-generational. Led by the great vocalist Jose Pepito Gomez and the pianist arranger Michael Eckroth. Those Perez Prado records back in the day, Tito Puente, you know, I would put those on at dance parties we would have, and they never failed to get people up and moving around.
the parallels that this record is drawing are to the Buena Vista Social Club album of the 90s that was curated by Ry Cooder, where he went to Havana and recorded with these legendary musicians. And some people have sort of described that as the Sunday morning answer to this record, which is a Saturday night affair. And that was a muted record, but comparison to this one. This is a furious dance record. You can hear it here. Orchestra Akokan with Mambo Rapido on Sound Opinions.
Ven y báilalo un poquito, baila mi mambo que
esto se acaba ya,
se acaba,
el mambo
se acaba,
esto se acaba ya,
se acaba baby,
el mambo se acaba.
Mueve la cintura pa' que goce tu manera, que este mambo que te traigo sea gozado donde quiera, baila mi mambo que
esto se acaba ya.
Orchestra Akokan from their self-titled debut album with Mambo Rapido on Sound Opinions.
I'm loving you today, Greg. Can I take you for a medianoche and some fried plantains right now?
Sure, why not? Let's go.
You were talking about garage rock, right? And we've heard so much of this, and you know, people take it for granted and it's like, oh, more garage rock. And then you hear something that blows your mind. It's like the first time you ever heard this genre. That is how I feel about a band called Alastor. A-L-A-S-T-O-R. I don't know if it's a play on Aleister Crowley. They are big on big from Sweden, mm-hmm. on the notion of death and doom and destruction and, you know, satanic and Halloween-y imagery. Okay. We've heard this a million times, right? But like I said, when you hear it done with a particular passion and delivered just absolutely perfectly, it's like, this is like the first time I heard Black Sabbath or Electric Wizard. Slave to the Grave. I mean, what else do you need to know, right? This is a concept album about death. We are all slaves to the grave, of course. We're all heading there sooner or later. They just like to sing about it, and they do it with these incredible, wonderful doom guitars and just fantastic drumming. I'm a sucker for this stuff. You know, I'd had friends say, this is good stuff. I'd gotten hyped by a publicist, and then you're like, more. And then like, yeah! Give me more as soon as I'm listening. This is Alastor with Slave to the Grave on Sound Opinions. We'll be right back. Alastor with the 7 apocalyptic songs on a new album, Slave to the Grave. That's the title track. I figured you'd like this.
Well, as soon as you had me with the first subterranean bass line, you know. It's like one of those things. As soon as my sternum starts to shudder, I'm in heaven. That's you know, what you're looking for. The other thing that I liked about this band is I'm not a huge fan of the Cookie Monster vocals.
You know,
I think sometimes they work, but most of the time they don't for me. It's nice to hear this kind of clean, more straight-ahead vocal style.
Dare we say Ozzy-esque, almost.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to stay in Europe, Jim. I'm going to go to Berlin for this next band. It is called Camera. They have been around for about 6 years. They made their name hanging out and doing kind of guerrilla shows all over Berlin. They would be at a train station or an apartment building or in an alley and just set up and start playing for people. And over the course of that, numerous lineup changes, 4 albums. The latest is just about to come out. It's called Emotional Detox. And I'm going to play one of the tracks from it, 11 minutes of prime krautrock, you know, German art rock from the 70s. They are huge heads of Neu. Michael Roeter was an early champion of this band. The guitarist from Neu would have this band open for his shows in Germany about a decade ago. So now we have a band with 4 albums out, and they've got a double keyboard lineup for this particular incarnation of the band. And you can hear a little bit of that dreamy, poppier, tangerine, dreamlike overlay over those driving motoric rhythms underneath with the double keyboards on top. This is called Petruya from Camera on Sound Opinions. That's Petruya from Camera. It's still going on and on somewhere in
It'll
your subconscious.
Never end. It'll
and put it on when you're driving, and you won't want to stop. You'll drive cross country.
If we had a 4-hour show, I'd play the whole thing. When we are now sharing our buried treasures picks with each other, but I don't know about you, I'm not researching or reading up anything about the bands you recommend. I'm just listening to the track and seeing if you're full of it or not. And I was like, you know, he had me at that first motoric beat. I'm all right, you know, what is noise? Yes.
I have to give a shout out to our mutual friend Robert Levine, who is a champion of modern day krautrock. There are bands out there doing it really well, and he's been sending me tracks, and this one really stood out.
Greg, I have one more pick for you. From Sydney, Australia, a group of young women. They are 4 16-year-old girls who began making music together forever ago at the age of 8 in music school. Mm. They are called Earthlings. I think, I don't want to go on about the age thing, but I think the most exciting young band I've heard since The Regrets, who are similarly teens, similarly all women, talking about the difficulties, the challenges, and the joys of growing up as a girl in 2018. There is a lot of pop influence, some zombies, some War Paint, a band we've had on the show. This particular track I'm going to play, Bridges, reminded me instantly of one of your favorite covers of all time, that Laura Nero and Patti LaBelle cover of I Met Him on a Sunday, because it starts with that finger snapping thing, right?
Right.
And then it builds and it builds, and we get these wonderful kind of hazy washes of shoegazer guitar and you know, the rhythms build, and the whole thing becomes this almost psychedelic swirl. They're a fantastic group. Earthlings, Bridges on Sound Opinions. That is Bridges by Earthlings from Australia, a debut single. Greg, I want more.
Yeah, good call on Earthlings, Jim. That wraps up this edition of Buried Treasures. Can't get enough of them. Can't wait till the next time we do this, Jim.
Yeah.
And our listeners, if you've got an album that is flying under the radar that everyone should hear, let us know and give us a call at 888-859-1800 or connect with us on Facebook or Twitter. Coming up, we remember Jeff Emmerich. He was the studio engineer behind the mixing board for the Beatles' Revolver and Abbey Road. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions, and now we want to pay tribute to the late Jeff Emmerich, who recently died at home in Los Angeles at the age of 72. Greg, what an incredible story. He's 15 years old when he begins at an underling at Abbey Road Studios. Day two on the job, he is there when the Beatles record Love Me Do. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who aren't ultra familiar with the recording studio, you know, they hear, well, Sir George Martin was the Beatles producer, right? But that's like the director of a movie, whereas the recording engineer is doing all the technical work. It's like the cameraman. Without a great camera person, and you don't have a great movie, no matter how great the director is. He was the technician who ran the machines and made sure everything got on tape. By the time the Beatles recorded Revolver in April 1966, he's promoted to a full engineer, you know, and now he's what, you know, 18, you know, 19? And he worked with them on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, basically everything else throughout their career, then went on to work with them some more at Apple Studios and their Apple Records label. But there was more to what he did.
Yeah, Jim, I mean, he had a huge resume. I mean, look at this who's who list of artists that he was working with. Stevie Wonder, Elvis Costello, you know, Imperial Bedroom, a lot of people revere that record in the Costello catalog. That was an Emmerich record, you know. Jeff Beck, America, Art Garfunkel, Robin Trower,
our neighbors,
Split
Cheap
Ends.
Trick.
Yeah. Tim Hardin, the folk rocker. And you know, a number of Beatles solo records. McCartney's Band on the Run, that was his project in Nigeria as well. So this guy was all over the map musically. I worked with all these titanic artists over the last few decades.
We had the honor of speaking to Jeff Emmerich in a show that we aired in 2006. We were talking specifically about the recording of Revolver for a classic album dissection, and he enlightened us on many things, including the trippy, experimental, brilliant, and timeless Tomorrow Never Knows.
Basically, it was, if I'm going to play a guitar, I don't want it to sound like a guitar. If I play the piano, I don't want it to sound like a piano. And so I'm thinking, what the hell do I do, you know? But of course, you know, I'm sort of tearing my hair out. And when we get into that first cut, you know, on Tomorrow Never Knows, which was originally Mark One, you know, with the revolving speaker for the vocal. I mean, you know, I was just grabbing at straws, really. And luckily, that revolving speaker sort of helped me and won John over to my calls anyway.
When you say a rotating speaker, it's the giant Leslie cabinet that most people use for Hammond organ.
That's right, yeah. You know, and I thought, well, if we can break into the circuitry, then perhaps we can feed the vocal mic through into that speaker. So and that's exactly what we did.
Which was violating every rule of Abbey Road, which is kind of an official kind of place. People wandering around in lab coats, and you had to wear a tie and cufflinks to work every day, and here you are breaking into the circuitry of a Hammond organ to record a vocal, which just wasn't done, right, Jeff?
No, of course it wasn't done, and I also had, you know, certain sounds in my head, because I'd been listening to a lot of American records while I was mastering records, and I wanted to try and improve or get more sort of adventurous sounds out of the studio than we were basically getting. And the other thing I was going in for was this closer sound on Ringo's drum kit. And then I had to move the bass drum mic closer to get that and take the front skin off, and got into trouble, you know, for moving the bass drum mic closer than 2 feet, and eventually ended up with a written letter to giving me permission to be able to do that.
Tell us about these backward tape loops, which were obviously a big part of Tomorrow Never Knows and the whole album. How did you guys happen upon using those?
You know, we all had our own little home tape recorders, and Paul in particular used to go home and experiment making these little crazy tape loops on his machine. But the backwards thing started where John actually had on his reel-to-reel, because, you know, we didn't have cassettes in those days, and the only way you could take a track home to listen to it was a playback lacquer. Which meant waiting for to the next day to get it. So John had his reel-to-reel tape machine, and being completely non-technical, took the tape home of a rough mix, and laced it up backwards on the machine, and came back the next day and said there was something wrong with the mix, not realizing that he'd been playing it backwards. so after that, that's how the backwards thing started. You know, we used to listen to everything backwards that we'd recorded, you know. And even a joke, because we were all a bit zany then, we thought that the Russian language was actually English backwards, and we got some Russian spoken word and played it backwards to see if it was actually English when it was played backwards, because it wasn't.
I didn't get the impression from Here, There, and Everywhere, your book, Jeff, that there was a stranger moment than Lennon deciding that he had to sound as if he was singing underwater for Yellow Submarine, and in fact, he wanted you to record him singing underwater.
Well, exactly. I mean, that was, you know, I'm running around the studio floor sort of tearing my hair out. You know, there's all the other people there, you know. So in the end, I thought, well, John, you can't do that. I mean, he'd been blowing and singing into walls from bubbles and God knows what else.
Oh,
So I thought, well, the next best thing, let's just out of desperation, was to try and put a microphone in a bottle of water and just sing to the glass milk bottle. But we had to protect the slim condenser microphone, which had, you know, like 240 volts running through it.
Yeah, electricity. I don't know much about recording engineering, but electricity and water don't mix, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So I was thinking, well, what can we put it in? And Mal Evans, you know, produced the condom out of his wallet, and put the mic in that, and then sunk that in the milk bottle. So and that's what we did. Well, I don't think I ended up using it. It was just a dull sort of sound. But I mean, John.
If you had that used condom today eBay, man, you'd be set for the next year. I'm telling you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Right. He couldn't understand why you couldn't directly inject his vocal like you could a bass guitar or a guitar later on, during recording. And until Jules Martin explained that he'd have to have an operation and have a jack socket implanted in his neck, but that was only said as a joke. You know, he was so ignorant of stuff like that. You know,
one of the things too that I think you sort of pioneered with this record, Revolver, Jeff, was just simply where you placed the microphones inside Ringo's bass drum and close mic. The string section on Eleanor Rigby. Did you have any idea how these experiments were going to turn out before you attempted them?
The Eleanor Rigby string sound was a sound that, you know, I discussed with Paul, and we wanted this close sound. And of course, when I went in very close onto the string players with those microphones, which was, of course, it was a double string quartet, so there was eight players there. They'd never been mic'd as close as that. And of course, some of the guys, as we would say in the back desk, who weren't as good as the gooder players as the guys in the front desks, you know, used to sort of slide their chairs away from the mics. But that, you know, I obviously could hear what was going on. I had to keep going downstairs and just getting them to move back in or move the mic closer. And in the end, George Martin had to tell them to stop doing it, and because we were after a particular sound.
Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream.
This was not done on Rock Records. You had basically a voice backed up by an eight-piece string section. That was unusual for a rock recording in those days. And
that's it, right.
McCartney was obviously looking for something different.
I think there was a conversation with George Martin may have suggested strings, and I believe Paul was thinking, oh, Mantovani, no, you know, the lush sort of string sound, and then I guess we, you know, the close miking thing, you know, came from those conversations.
What I like about your book, Jeff, Here, There, and Everywhere, is that it, at the same time that it acknowledges the accomplishments, it demythologizes the Beatles. My entire life, I've grown up with this thing being shoved down my throat. Nothing I ever experienced in my lifetime will be as good as the Beatles were. You know,
right.
And I was, by the time I caught up, they were long gone, right? But when you see this whole thing of Beatles, right?
Yeah.
You know, the mountaintop, the paradigm. I mean, how do you feel about it? For you, there were a couple of guys, you know, Lennon could be snarky to you and kind of nasty. Paul was kind of sucking up in politic. The other two guys are quiet. I mean, they were just guys that you worked with.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, this is a story of just human beings making music in the studio with all its problems. And, you know, George Harrison didn't come down from the sky playing magical guitar solos. And, and young kids now who feel I can't possibly, you know, learn the guitar because you have to, you know, you just play the guitar. You have to learn. And George learned, you know, and it's the story of George learning, you know, which I think is great, you know.
A crowd of people turned away. But I just have to look, having read the book. I'd love to turn you
That was Jeff Emmerich talking with us in 2006. He died earlier this month at the age of 72. You can hear more about Jeff Emmerich working on Revolver on our website, soundopinions.org. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to have a conversation with Emmy-winning music supervisor Susan Jacobs.
For more Sound Opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find those things. The show was produced, as always, by Brendan Banasak, Alex Claiborne, Iona Contreras, and Andrew Gill. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
Operator, or could you help me place this call? See, the number on the matchbook is old and faded.
New messages.
Hey, Jim and Greg, this is Ted from Montreal. I was listening to your episode with The Rock Doctor and Rebecca and Wheaton.
I realized I was going to have to expand my musical horizons to bring him up in a household that showed him that he could be a whole bunch of different things, that he didn't have to just be a toxic dude.
And I think you're going to get a lot of mail from males, your voicemail. And that's fine. I agree basically with the position and the anti-patriarchal and anti-gender. However, I wonder if you picked the right song. I know you dislike Bowie, but, you know, Brian Eno also helped him on the Visconti-produced Heroes, and I thought that that is a personal track. It's not exactly full of gender. I don't think Bowie is exactly your alpha dominant male, but he is a male, which I think is also important because, you know, the traditional stuff has virtues and has instructions about how to be in the world as well that help a boy fit, which, let's be honest, is also as important for boys as it is for girls. So I would suggest Heroes and see how that goes. Maybe you want to give it a scan. Thanks for the show, and thanks for all you do.
Hey, this is Wayne calling from Durham, North Carolina. I'm calling on the excellent MC5 show. I go way back with these guys to that first Uncensored album. My roommate John and I were sitting in military school in Tennessee and not liking life, but he had a good record store connection. So anyway, we got this album and we had no idea what was on it. We put on that first track and it blew our minds. Anyway, enjoy the show. Keep up the good work.
This is Russell from Ashburn, North Carolina. I really appreciate the Wayne Kramer interview, the MC5s. What can be said about them? They probably, and I've often said this, were the American version of the Sex Pistols. They had energy. They had the zeal. And I tell you, it was definitely not for the faint-hearted, but anyway, that was one group that they laid it down and burned it all the way to the very end. Thanks for the segment on that.
Hey, Sound Opinions. This is Greg from Las Vegas. Awesome interview about Wayne Kramer. I designed a couple of his albums when he was on Epitaph in the 90s, and Wayne was the coolest guy to deal with. I had gone to his house a few times to talk about the records, the layout, the photography, everything. He was such an approachable man, and it was refreshing to hear the interview. And I haven't talked to Wayne in so many years, but great show, great interview, and keep it up. Thanks.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.